Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Pro Money Talk. I am Jason Papier.
And I'm Peter Johnson.
And welcome to the show. We were absent last week. I was at a conference, a Financial Planning Association conference, and Peter...
Well, I was on top of a mountain, but we won't talk about that too much. I meant to be there. I wasn't stuck there, but it was a good time away from things, time to reflect. So thanks for your patience. We're back and happy to be doing the show again.
In this week's show, we're going to be talking about the Hurricane Katrina disaster and what effect it could have on the economy and the stock market. But first, I want to mention our website at www.promoneytalk.com. There you can join our email list and submit questions that we may answer on the air.
Read summaries of past shows, find links to things that we talk about during the show, and so on.
Good. So, Peter, let's talk about Hurricane Katrina.
Okay. I think before we talk about it in economic terms and investment terms, I think we have to acknowledge the human side of it, which is a vast tragedy and perhaps an opportunity. But a lot of people suffered. We certainly want to acknowledge that. People are still suffering. They may carry some of this grief with them for the rest of their lives. It's a very sad thing, and we hope that when they rebuild New Orleans, and perhaps they'll even think a little smarter. It's a difficult area to shore up. I was hearing last night that just to build the levees 10% higher, I think the number was, it would cost twice as much money. As you go up, it increases exponentially, and there's nothing they can do really to prevent storm surges from breaching the walls. And in the Netherlands, they have double dike systems. So if one fails, the second one won't, but you lose land area with that. So hopefully when they rebuild, they're not going to provide instant payback or money to people who will just go back and build something that'll be lost again in another 25 years and create the same kind of suffering. Very, very difficult problems.
Let me ask you a sort of an interesting question here, Peter. A lot of people that I've heard who maybe aren't real knowledgeable about New Orleans and its history have said how silly it is, really, that there's a city there and it's below sea level, and why is it there? And I've heard people, in fact, comment that they should simply move the city. However, there's a real reason for the city to be there, and it's an economic reason.
Yeah, but it's right at the mouth of the Mississippi River, where tons of shipping from the Midwest comes and goes. There are refineries and staging areas and supply areas and warehouses and so on. So I think you can have that, but some of the cities lower than other parts, and maybe just keep that in mind. You need people there to work those jobs and to man those kinds of facilities. It's also interesting that it's the largest deepwater port for oil importation in the U.S. and the only liquefied natural gas depot for us. And this upcoming storm, Rita, which is now a Category 2 hurricane and has passed Florida, is headed for the Gulf Coast, although to the west of New Orleans, also could have a substantial impact on oil production and refining facilities, which are concentrated in that area, obviously having a great deal to do with the economic importance of the area. Although the total output in New Orleans is, in that area that was hit by Katrina, is only about 3% of U.S. gross domestic production. So it didn't affect the economy greatly, but it affected it in a very primary in energy.
What I found fascinating and what I think a lot of people found interesting and maybe surprising was that the stock markets didn't react very much to the disaster at all. In fact, they were level and in some days continued to gain ground.
Well, the stock market carries some ancient wisdom, and that is that natural disasters come and go, and there's a typical pattern of disruption, loss of jobs, and so on in the beginning, but then there's a rebuilding process that creates many more jobs. It sort of revitalizes things a little bit. So the losses are offset by the gains to some extent, and these events are transitory or temporary in nature. So The stock market confirmed that, didn't really show too much in the way of ups and downs, except in some of the industry sectors like insurance, where some of the, well, it's natural for investors to pull back when something looks like it might be in threatened or in danger. The insurance companies, the payout was unknown, and investors pulled out of insurance. Insurance stocks dropped in the first week, especially insurers heavily exposed to the New Orleans area and some of the larger reinsurers. But by the second week, the stocks of those insurers were already coming back, and they had attained their pre-disaster levels by the end of the period, because investors know that they're going to be able to raise rates. Their reserves were adequate to cover this disaster. The total reserves in the insurance industry and property and casualty are about $400 billion. And I don't know what the final numbers are on this disaster, but a week ago it was about, people were estimating $17 to $25 billion. And a big part of that is deciding whether or not insurers will have to pay for flood damage in the guise of wind and rain damage. So let me speak to that for a moment. It's important for people to know that your homeowner's insurance covers you against fire and some other perils, but it doesn't cover you against flood. So if you live in a floodplain or an area that could be flooded, you could be wiped out, and your insurance would not help you with that. So in this case, obviously, the primary losses were due to flooding. But if the losses are primarily due to wind and rain, then the insurers do have to pay up. So it comes down to an argument of how much was caused by wind and rain and versus how much was caused by flooding. And I saw pictures of even brick walls that tumbled before the floods came. So it wasn't just the ground settling. The wind and the rain and so on did take a real toll there. So that's a big question about, or that's a big part of the question about how much insurers will have to pay out in the end.
Well, that sounds like an area of contention for a long time, unfortunately. We talked about the short-term effect on the market just now and that it didn't have much of an effect. Let's talk about the longer-term effect that the disaster or disasters have on the economy. And what do you see from this disaster in particular? How do you see this affecting the long-term economic health of the country?
Well, that's a great question. According to the Congressional Budget Office, it looks like we are losing maybe 400,000 jobs from this disaster. It looks like we may lose 0.5% to 1% of our gross domestic product from the disaster. And as you know, two consecutive quarters, calendar quarters, of lack of growth or negative growth would constitute a recession. Fortunately, a loss of 0.5% to 1% in growth this year is not going to put us into a recession because we had a comfortable basis going in. We were growing at 3.5%, 3 to 3.5% a year going into the disaster. So I don't think we're likely to hit a recession as a result of this isolated disaster. On the other hand, we could see higher energy prices. We don't know how long it'll take to get back to full energy production, although it was only a week after the disaster that 10 of the 20 refineries were back online and working. We don't know the damage to the mouth of the Mississippi River, or if there were obstructions or changes in the physical geography of the waterways. It takes a while to look underwater and see what's there to make sure that shipping will flow freely. We don't know what happened to the undersea pipelines. Sometimes there are undersea landslides and things that break the infrastructure. So there's some intermediate term stuff, but in the longer term, what really is of the greatest concern to me right now is the question of how much this is going to cost in terms of government spending. I saw yesterday that we've reached $1 billion in private spending or contributions on this, and I don't know what that comes out to per person, but it's very generous. We're going to have to rebuild a city, and that could cost up to $40,000 a person. So there's a lot to come here. This particular disaster Congress has already laid out $50 to $60 billion for. The total cost could be in the area of $100 to $200 billion. That puts us back up at an annual budget deficit, federal budget deficit, of back into the $450 to $500 billion range. that's where we started about a year ago, and things are getting better, and receipts were picking up, and the budget was looking a little more balanced. It's looking way out of balance again, which is a worrisome thing down the road. And then if you add other disasters or problems that come up, I mean, we've fought a couple of wars recently. We've got Rita headed for the coast of Texas. Of course, we're all hypersensitive about storms at this point and hurricanes, especially our oil infrastructure. It could be very expensive. It could run up a huge government budget deficit.
That's interesting that you mentioned that. That was the first thing that I thought of last week when I saw the news that the government was going to not only be footing a bill, but that the president had declared that he would do so and not raise taxes. We've had a long-standing discussion about the danger of high deficits, and this will mean certainly that either spending needs to be cut in other areas or we're going to increase our deficit.
And the problem with deficits, of course, is that increased borrowing through U.S. Treasury issuance means the government's competing for money with the private sector, and it means higher interest rates, all things being equal, and more expensive to do business for business, and more expensive for consumers to borrow, and it generally has a slowing effect on the economy and a negative effect on stocks and bonds.
Well, speaking of rising interest rates and slowing economy, we'll get back to the more about Katrina in just a second here, but today the Fed announced that they were raising interest rates 0.25%, and that was surprising to some who thought that due to the disaster, the Fed may not raise rates.
Well, I haven't read the report from the Fed yet, but I think they are more concerned about inflation than they are about the short-term effects of Katrina. I was one of those who thought they would suspend raising rates for at least one meeting, because Chairman Greenspan is famous for coming to our aid with extra money, and I won't go into that at this point, how the interest rates and the money supply relate. But in effect, he's saying, gee, I'm not going to give you any extra bonuses or benefits right now. I'm going to continue on this path of tightening, and I'm not worried about this particular disaster. I think they did mention something in the announcement about the thought that this would be a short-term problem, and the long-term problem of inflation was a greater concern at this point. So even though I was on the side of those who thought they would not raise rates, I'm kind of pleased that they did, because it tells me that they think the economy is fairly strong enough to withstand some more continued rate increases. And I'm glad that they're fighting inflation, because that's a real difficult genie to put back in its box once it gets out.
Well, and I did read some of the reports after the Fed meeting, and it sounds as if they feel exactly the way that you feel, and that is that this isn't going to have too much of an effect on short term on the economy in the short term.
So, I'd like to parenthetically branch out here and speak to the general way that markets react to disasters and problems. Markets, financial markets in particular, don't like uncertainty. In the face of uncertainty, prices will drop. People are not interested in participating when they might have a loss. So in the beginning of a disaster or calamity of some sort, you definitely see markets pull back a little bit. In this case, we didn't see much of that in the stock market, and that was nice. But on 9/11, for instance, we saw the markets drop quite a bit. So markets don't like uncertainty at all. They don't like to have to deal with something that they can't see the end of. You know, they see a problem, but they don't really know the extent of it. So the safest course is just to get out and wait till the dust settles. So those are really buying opportunities, but they can be very short-lived. But in this case, I think the market saw beyond the calamity. It said, oh, hurricane, maybe a flood. At least we know what we're dealing with, and we'll get back on track, and we can see how that'll happen. So I think it's important to know that the market does recover from calamities of various sorts, whether it's assassination of John Kennedy or 9/11. All kinds of events have come and shaken the markets for a while, but they eventually get back on track. So it's scary at those times, but sometimes the investment opportunities are rather short-lived, and trying to time them is difficult.
So the markets are pretty resilient, and they've certainly proven to be in this disaster. if there isn't much of a short-term economic impact, especially as it relates to the market, and there isn't likely to be a long-term economic impact outside of government spending, what is the legacy, if you will, of Katrina on the economic landscape?
Well, it seems to me that the discussions that are coming out of Katrina in terms of what's important and how do we protect our country, we're going to be looking at a number of different areas of public policy. How much the government should be involved, how much should we be spending, who should be in charge of it, our energy policy, whether we should have higher taxes, all these kinds of things. What's the role of the states versus the federal government? It's really thrown open a lot of areas of discussion, and I think rightfully so. We've been focusing on terrorism, and the fact is the terrorists, bad as it was, killed 3,000 people on 9/11. If we have an avian flu outbreak or something of that nature and we lose millions of people, shouldn't we be looking at those things a little more carefully? And I don't think this current administration or any other wants to be caught behind the eight ball again, as bad as it was with Katrina. Now, how they cover all those bases at once, I haven't a clue, because these are very difficult problems. But certainly we have to evaluate what the real threats are and how we're going to allocate resources intelligently to try to deal with them. Unfortunately, I think it'll become a political pork barrel discussion, and where does, you know, I don't know that it'll go anywhere, but hopefully it's causing people to rethink the simple mentality of we've got one threat that we need to focus on. And so I see a political landscape that's shifting. And out of that could come economic consequences. People who have different agendas and different ways of approaching things. Let's say people decide that government needs to spend more and be there for people. Well, eventually that will mean higher taxes or higher inflation. The government could bail us out of our debt to some extent by allowing inflation to creep in, although I don't see any evidence of that at this point, but it's a very convenient out and it's been used throughout history.
So longer term, we're really looking at a shift. You think we're really looking at a shift in or a potential shift in policy that may lead to change in the economic landscape?
Exactly. Economic landscape and the political landscape shifting too, that Bush was already under pressure with some of his policies. And this really calls into question so many areas of health and energy and natural resources and so on that it's hard to tell how far reaching this discussion will go. But hopefully we'll ask the right questions and get to work on them, because I'm sure we can handle all these things as long as we don't waste time with a lot of posturing and defending and so on. I think there have been more fingers pointed at, you know, from the left side and the right side and the inside and the outside. And, you know, let's focus on the problems instead of each other.
I think one thing that's interesting is that out of all this, probably the most immediate impact on the markets economically has been due to rises in energy prices. And of course, that is compounding the rise in energy prices that we've already that we've been seeing lately, in part due to increase in consumption, in part due to a decrease in output in Iraq, where they're having difficulties transporting some of the oil. And then, of course, as I mentioned, this disaster, there's certainly a heightened awareness of the importance of energy and our reliance on oil. And the last time that happened, there was an interesting and long-lived shift in at least one major industry, the auto industry.
That's when they put into effect fleet gasoline mileage targets and things like that.
And cars went from big, heavy American cars that had got low gas mileage, and that sort of sparked the whole Japanese automobiles that were lighter and more fuel efficient to become more popular.
Well, I hope we have some intelligent shifts this time. Last time, that initial inflationary spike seemed to last for quite a while. We had a tough time with the stagflation in the late 70s. This time we actually saw the government pull some oil out of the oil reserves, which was a good thing to help make up the shortfall. And the International Energy Agency brought some oil out of reserves as well, about 2 million barrels a day for 30 days. So that brought the oil prices back down to where they were pre-Katrina. However, at this point now, 2 weeks later or so, we're looking at OPEC admitting, almost admitting publicly, that they can't really keep the price of gas and oil low anymore. They're pushing up against their production limits. They're going to give the last 2 million barrels a day that they can give, and beyond that, it's out of their control. So really, demand for oil is a primary pusher of prices. And I would say, obviously, the growth of China and the world economy is the big driver there. It's not a thing where people can cut back on if the prices are too high. They can to some extent, but gee, you've got to be able to drive your car or turn on your lights. I thought it was interesting when I was doing research for the memo that we sent to clients for this discussion that since the 70s, our oil energy use in the U.S. has only increased 9% since 1979, while GDP output has doubled.
Wow.
And I didn't see an explanation for that, but I'm sure that has to be part of the reason is that we're moving away from manufacturing and towards service and information industries.
And there's been a lot of efforts in the conservation arena as well.
Part of the problem is oil discovery and production, but also refinery capacity. We've added capacity, but we haven't built any new refineries since the 70s. So you talk about intelligent responses to an oil crisis. Yeah, even if we can get the oil, we can't even use it because we can't refine it. So we haven't built any new nuclear power plants since the 70s. We haven't built any new refinery. And we're talking about, we had this national campaign to becoming energy independent. They gave some tax write-offs. So hopefully we can address this in some real ways. But we need to increase our capacity to produce energy. And as nice as renewable sources are, they're not cheap. And they don't produce a whole lot of energy. I mean, you can use a solar cell and charge up a battery over a day. That stuff helps, and that's a good step, and it's becoming more efficient. But I'm sure that we're going to see this discussion fan out into all these other areas, including nuclear power, and hopefully we can do that safely. What a lot of people don't realize is that even coal plants deposit tons of radioactive material in the air every year. Nuclear energy may not be, on the whole, that much less safe than other forms. There's dangers to each kind.
So the legacy of Katrina, Peter, may be that it adds to the discussion about energy and that it has some effect on our political landscape.
Yeah, if the Democrats can field anybody that's credible, the Republicans could well be in trouble after this current four-year term.
Peter, what sectors do you see doing well and what sectors do you see being hit from this disaster?
Utilities are likely to have a tough time going forward from here because obviously their costs of energy production, if you will, or supplying natural gas and so on, their costs are going up, but politicians are probably not going to grant rate increases while we're in the middle of a crisis. We're probably going to see higher gas and heating oil costs in the next few months, like 25% higher. So that's pretty significant for a lot of people. Also, lenders will probably take a hit. Because people have lost their homes and they don't have insurance to rebuild them, and if they don't have a lot of equity in their property, they're probably just going to walk away from it. The equity's been wiped out. Buildings are gone. Rebuilding costs will be high, of course, and labor and materials will be in great demand. Industries that will probably do well as this period passes are in construction, environmental cleanup, emergency preparedness, and perhaps real estate, because there'll be more properties changing hands. And I have a hunch that healthcare could be a beneficiary as well. There are going to be a lot of people with health problems and a need to take care of them. Yeah. So in summary, in communicating to our clients our outlook, we let them know that uncertainty has increased a bit, certainly the uncertainty of a recession, the uncertainty of a little more inflation. But no new buying opportunities have really emerged. So we haven't changed our investment allocations at this point. It is a complex situation, and new information is coming up every day, including here comes the second storm. This may actually be thought of, when all is said and done, not as a single storm, but as a complex of storms or events that coincided and colluded to maybe cause us to reexamine some of our policies. But for now, the impact seems to be limited in area and duration. So we're going to keep an eye on the situation, and we'll keep you informed. And we hope this discussion has given you some insight and a framework for putting recent events in perspective.
Well, that's our show for today. If you have any comments or questions about Katrina or any other financial matters, please give us a holler at www.promoneytalk.com.
And promoneytalk@gmail.com, good email address for us. We'd also welcome audio comments. If any of you have a microphone plugged into your computer and know how to use it, want to send an audio question or a success story to me, I would love to have that. We're going to be featuring more success stories as time goes on.
Well, I'm Jason.
And I'm Peter, and we're awfully glad that you listened this week.